From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The issue of Russia, its roles and motivations in the U.S. election, and its bold, brash president are all subjects of American curiosity. It is tempting to dismiss this entire nation as personified by Vladimir Putin, a one-dimensional, nefarious villain whose primary goal is to undermine U.S. democracy. The reality is, of course, much more complicated. Exploring some of the cultural aspects of this misunderstood nation is my next guest, Michael Idov. Idov is an award-winning magazine writer and screenwriter who was invited to become GQ Russia's editor-in-chief after his novel, Ground Up, became a sensation in Moscow. After spending 3 years there, Idov wrote a memoir called Dressed Up for a Riot. He now joins me from Berlin to discuss the book. Welcome, Michael.
Hi, Sonali. Thanks for having me.
And the subtitle is Misadventures in Putin's Moscow. So explain what led you to Moscow. I understand that you're originally Latvian.
Well, I'm originally from Latvia. I'm a Russian-speaking Jew from Latvia. Yeah, it's complicated. But I've lived in America for 20 years, for most of my life. So when I went to Moscow, it was actually the first time I ended up living in Russia proper.
And you went there because your novel made you very popular. Your novel Ground Up made you very popular, and it was highly acclaimed there. It was eaten up by Moscovites, and then you were featured in GQ Russia. Eventually, you became its editor-in-chief. Did you ever imagine that that would be that path to Russia for you?
No, it was kind of an absurd chain of events, to be honest. Yeah, I wrote this book that even my agent told me that, you know what, you might not get any audience outside of New York, not just outside of the States, but outside of New York, because it's too local, sort of.
It was a fictional story about, set in New York.
Yeah, it was like a piece of social satire about the gentrifying Lower East Side, yeah. And it was very geographically specific, so and kind of sociologically specific. So the last thing I imagined was that it would somehow become a bestseller in Russia, but somehow it did. Actually, not somehow. It was an interesting point that I am making in this new book, Dressed Up for a Riot, because in 2010 or so, you know, Russia, especially Moscow, was really looking toward New York for inspiration and almost seeing kind of the city that it could possibly become one day. And so I think I was kind of caught up in that wave of this kind of uncritical adoration of New York that that progressive Moscovites had at the moment. And it's actually useful to remember that that moment existed because God knows things are very different now.
And of course, what we hear about Russia here in the United States is that this is a country that wants to undermine American democracy. Russian hackers are on the payroll of the Russian government. Russian spies in other countries are poisoned. And it becomes something akin to fodder for dramatic novels or action movies. In Moscow, however, tell us, give us a sense of what you found when you went to this actually very cosmopolitan city. What is the impression that people have there of the United States? If we sort of turn over on its head, vague impressions that cultures have of each other.
Well, first of all, the key thing to understand about Russia is that it's not a country that's trying to destroy the American democracy. It's a regime that's trying to survive by any means necessary. And these means include telling its own citizens that there is no democracy in any other country in the world, because otherwise they might suspect that something is wrong with their country. So America is almost collateral damage in this. In fact, Putin's operation is entirely aimed at the Russians. It's basically aimed at explaining to the general population that, you know, what you're seeing here the corruption, the sort of the favoritism, the, you know, the kind of the overall sense that the game is rigged. It's like that everywhere. It's never been better. It's never been anything else. And that actually seems to be his real worldview as well. So there's an enormous irony in the fact that the world is kind of becoming like that. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy in a way. But when I came to Russia in 2012, I had been coming there as a reporter for the New Republic, for New York Magazine, for the American GQ, and other places. And so I wasn't entirely naive about it. And of course, what I saw was this huge gap that's always existed between the official stance, you know, toward America and what people actually feel. And the truth is, there is, you know, up until very recently, there was no real anti-American sentiment on the ground level. And even now, to be honest, it's more of this eternal Russian sense of being underappreciated and undervalued. And all they want is sort of to be acknowledged and praised. And they feel that they haven't been getting their due since the Soviet Union fell apart. And it's true that, you know, Russia has felt very patronized and mistreated in the 90s by the West that sort of promised it the world. And then, you know, not much actually appeared to transpire out of these promises. So a lot of it is really kind of, there's a bit of self-loathing in that, you know, in the new kind of Russian nationalism, and we have to recognize it, and we have to kind of honor it in a way, you know.
What is sentiment in Moscow around Vladimir Putin like? This is a really critical issue. He easily won re-election this year, yet there have been mass protests on the streets of Russian cities, big cities like Moscow, and those protests have been dismissed by pro-Putinites as being entirely the work of the anti-Russian West. You found yourself with a front row seat to some of these protests. Can you accurately tell us, or give us a more accurate version of what has motivated these protests?
Well, that's what the book really is about, because I was drawn to Russia not by the offer of an editorial job itself, but by this sort of feeling. If you remember, the end of 2011 was kind of a very special time, because that was the time of Arab Spring and Occupy Wall Street and Tahrir, and the Moscow protests felt like a part of that. They were people forget that now, but they were actually leaderless, because now the Russian opposition is almost entirely synonymous with Alexei Navalny, the protest leader and the opposition leader who unsuccessfully ran for president. Well, unsuccessfully meaning he was barred from running for president and then called for an electoral boycott. Back then, the protests were actually, there was an attempt at horizontality to these protests, you know, and it was fascinating to look at. And there was, for maybe a matter of weeks, there was a feeling that this might get somewhere, that the government might actually offer some concessions to the protesters. And that was exactly the moment when I decided, oh, I have to be there. Moscow is clearly the next place to be. And witness this, if not take outright part in this. So that's what I did. What I witnessed, of course, was a sound drubbing. The protesters just basically, you know, thrown in jail after May 6, 2012, the one protest that turned violent, and hundreds of people were not just detained, but actually imprisoned for that. Then this sort of a turn rightward that Russia had as a response, you know, the Pussy Riot trial. In my estimation, everything that transpired with Crimea and the war with Ukraine, all of this can, in a way, be chalked up to the reaction to these protests. So in that sense, in the sense of heightening the conflict, as it were, the protests were enormously successful, because they had predetermined the course of the Russian policy and politics for the next 5 years, which is what we've seen played out recently. The problem is, that, of course, that life has become much harder for average Russians and, for most of the world because of the instability that that has brought on.
Now, your book is entitled Dressed Up for a Riot, and you just mentioned Pussy Riot, the feminist punk protest group that made a big impression on people in the West outside Russia. How central a role did this group play in the sort of culture wars within Russia? How are they viewed within Russia by ordinary Russians? We know how they're viewed by the government.
Well, yes, of course. Pussy Riot were always kind of optimized for Western consumption. It's not an accident that their name is in English, you know. So that it was a very clever bit of kind of protest marketing on their part. But at the same time, I have enormous respect for them, of course, for actually being, willing to go to prison for their convictions and having done 2 years in prison and just basically walking the walk as far as sort of suffering for the cause is concerned. But the problem with that is, of course, their cause, their take on it, their sort of kind of slightly anarchic, kind of global left feminist take on anti-Putinism didn't really find much of a response domestically. It was, it's true, it was more popular in the West than in Russia, because the thing, the sort of the sad thing for me to understand about the Russian opposition is that the people we consider liberals and Putin's opposition are politically, if we put them into sort of normal political terms, they're far to the right of Putin. Navalny is to the right of Putin. These are sort of, at best, free market libertarians with some authoritarian tendencies. So it's actually very hard for them to embrace a very kind of left and feminist agenda. And generally, the Russian liberals and anti-Putin opposition, this was one of the big disappointments for me, they really do not concern themselves with what we in America would call issues. You know, they could not be bothered about gay rights at all, or women's rights, or, you know, equality. And you can see that in very dismissive attitudes that they adopt toward these things. So a lot of it is basically, a lot of them are just, if they were American, they would be actually hard right Republicans. That's kind of the irony of it. Putin, if you take away the corruption and all the nefariousness and just look at the program, like the platform of United Russia as the party is actually more of a democratic socialist kind of European thing that we're more used to seeing out of Europe. That's kind of one of the weird but sadly true things about Russia.
Let's talk about Trump, businessman turned president who's had longings for relationships with Russian businessmen, who had dreams of Trump Tower in Russia, you know, Trump Towers in Russian cities, who almost seems like culturally would fit within the sort of party scene within a city like Moscow much more than he does at the White House. How do you explain Donald Trump's relationship with Russia? He's tried very hard to distance himself from Putin, and yet many on the left here in the U.S. assume that Russia has installed Trump in our White House.
Right. Well, I actually write about this in the book, about sort of Trump and Donald Jr. sort of not realizing not recognizing these sort of offers when they came, you know, from this manager for Amina Galarov, a person who I actually know in Moscow, you know, not recognizing them as a foreign power, because for them, they're not a foreign power, because they exist in this kind of, as I call it, like the supranational state of poshlost, the sort of you know, this international club kid kind of tacky wealth sphere that actually supersedes nationality. First of all, I'm very upset that the conversation on the American left has turned to this kind of easy Russia has installed Trump trope. And I recently had a meeting, you know, in London. I was at a very interesting sort of get together with one of the Democratic senators and passing through town. And it saddens me to see that become just almost like part and parcel of sort of the Democratic platform, the Democratic Party kind of platform is, okay, the Russian interference has installed Trump. Because, yeah, there was obviously was Russian interference. To be honest, I think we're actually kind of overestimating the influence of the troll farms and underestimating the outright infrastructure hacker attacks, which I think are actually much scarier because there is zero evidence that the these troll farm activities have swayed anyone beyond what natural sort of racist and nativist and just generally kind of Tea Party-ish sentiment would sway voters anyway. But the problem is that saying Russia has installed Trump, it's a way to not deal with the problems in America. It's a way to avoid even considering that there is some responsibility, you know, to be shared on part of the Democratic Party as well for losing voters to Trump. And it's so much easier to just say that a hostile foreign actor did this. You know, they did this to us. And ironically, it's a lot like what Putin does with the Russians. The Russians in Putin's sort of propaganda view are never to blame for anything. Everything is a conspiracy against them. Everything is an attack against them. And mirroring that kind of rhetoric is not a great look for the mainstream American politics, to be honest.
So in a way, it is a two-way street here. Michael, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Good luck with the book.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
My guest has been Michael Idov, award-winning journalist. He worked for New York Magazine. He's a screenwriter as well. His earlier book is a novel called Ground Up. He was editor of GQ Russia from 2012 to 2014. We've been discussing his new book. It's a memoir, Dressed Up for a Riot, Misadventures in Putin's Moscow. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.